Hello and welcome to Ag PhD Radio. I'm Darren Hefty.
And I'm Brian Hefty. Thanks for joining us today. Today in the show, we are going to talk a little about picking soybean varieties for disease tolerance. Now, if you're not a soybean producer, there's still a lot of things that are going to absolutely apply to you regardless of the crop that you're raising. We're also going to get to the Ag PhD mailbag here in just a minute. If you've got any questions for us, you can email them at radio@agphd.com. Or if you'd like to call into the show, our phone lines will be open throughout the day. Our number here is 844-44-AG-PHD. That's 844-442-4743. All right, so with picking soybean varieties for disease tolerance, I guess part of the reason why we wanted to talk about this and just, you know, any variety selection, at this time of year, it's, for those of us in the northern United States, it's really cold outside, and we're probably not thinking a whole lot about planting, except for the fact that every seed dealer in the country is out asking for your order right now. And I was talking to an agronomist this morning from up in North Dakota, and I was just making the comment to him, you know, look at your difference from one year to the next. Last year at this point, a lot of guys in North Dakota weren't even done with harvest. This year, it's been done for a month. There's still tiling being done and ditching being done and everything. No snow on the ground. I mean, it's just completely different from one year to the next. So because of this difference, and because harvest got done early throughout much of the United States and part of Canada as well, because there is a lot more cash out there right now with commodity prices up and there were a lot of government payments, insurance payments, everything else, we do believe that a lot more farmers than normal are going to be prepaying and ordering seed early. And our whole point here is when you're ordering seed, don't just look at yield. Really look at disease tolerance. That is incredibly important, and there's a big difference from one variety to the next. So we'll get into that all throughout the show today. But right now, let's get to the Ag PhD mailbag.
It's now mailbag time with Brian and Darren.
All right, this is from Evan in Southeast Kansas. And I love one word that you used, Evan, in here, and that is aggressive. Sent in soil samples. He said, I wonder what aggressive steps that you would take to make this farm more productive. It's going to be corn in 2021.
Okay, there's one soil test in here Darren, I just want to see what you think about this. Okay, the cation exchange capacity is only 13. So we'd call that a medium textured soil. So it's not like really heavy. He's got some heavy ground here, 20 up to 28 cation exchange capacity. But in this 13 CEC one sample, it says 15% sodium. Now 15% sodium means that ground is dead. I don't buy it. I don't buy it. And the reason why I don't is a 13 CEC, and we're getting that sodium that hung up, it's a real outlier with everything else. So I don't know what's going on with that one spot, but I wanted to bring this up first because I think just about every farmer can relate to this. There might be a bad spot on your farm, okay? We really want to address the very worst spots, because if you can get even some production there, well, hey, that might give you the best return on investment of anything you do on your farm. But I don't know. I just really question that, and I might even go resample that spot because it seems strange. A lot of times when we see sodium levels at 15%, it's one of two things that's happened. Either we've got a really crazy amount of manure that's been applied over the years, or we have a major drainage problem. Well, when it's only a 13 CEC, I struggle to believe that we have a major drainage problem unless there's some super heavy clay layer right below that I don't know about. So anyway, anytime we've got these sodium levels that are high, because he's got a couple other spots, 3%, 5%, and of course this one at 15, what we're going to talk about is to fix those sodic soils. The first thing we always want to look at is drainage. We've almost always got to get drain tile in there, but it really helps to know the backstory. Like I was saying, maybe it is just over application of manure. Maybe those are spots right next to the cattle yard or whatever, and you're going out spreading and you're just dumping it on. I don't know, but all I know is I wouldn't be putting any manure out there for a little while. But as I say that, when he's talking about fixing his soil, one of the big things that stands out for me, his phosphorus levels are actually not terrible. I mean, some are okay, but or some are really good. But, you know, we only have a few that really need fixing on the phosphorus side. He's got a lot of 50s. Okay, so that's fairly decent. I mean, you got to at least keep applying some every year and all that maintenance level. But anyway, where I wanted to go is the potassium, under 2%. If you're at under 2% base saturation K, that is absolutely not even close to sufficient for any crop you're going to raise. So our topic today is soybean varieties. Well, I don't care if we're talking soybeans, we're talking corn, we're talking wheat, whatever it is. You can't be below 2% on base saturation K, or you're not going to have the quality that you want. You're not going to have the stalk strength that you want. And in a lot of cases, you won't have the yield that you could potentially get as well. I would also say we have some levels of boron and copper, but there aren't test results for everything. So I would like to see my levels on everything. I'd also like manganese. It's not on the test. The few results we do have for boron and copper, they're both really low. A lot of times I'm looking at, hey, I'd like to see a couple parts per million on boron out there. And for copper, again, at least 2, maybe 3. So those are things that I'm going to be looking at. And sulfur is really low. This is another thing we commonly see almost every soil test that comes in. We got single digit parts per million levels on sulfur. We're starving our crops for sulfur. And keep in mind, too, almost everybody wants to focus on nitrogen. And that's great when you're raising corn and wheat and all these crops that need nitrogen. We got to focus on that. That might be our biggest expense each year in terms of fertility. But here's the thing you need to know. When your sulfur levels are insufficient, then your plant doesn't use nitrogen well, and it kind of becomes a nitrogen waster. So what I'm saying is if you get your sulfur levels up even just a little bit, you're going to find that you can raise the same yield with less nitrogen, and that's a win in terms of profitability. Last thing I'll throw out is zinc. We usually like to see those 10-to-1 phosphorus to zinc. Well, you got a lot of 50s on phosphorus and a lot of 1s on zinc. So we're not even close to 10-to-1. I'd be getting a little more zinc out there too. So lots of things that we can work on addressing, and it's variable throughout the field, so just use some variable rate fertility. Well, we'll talk about picking soybean varieties for disease tolerance next.
Downtime during spraying can lead to huge yield losses. Keep rolling with the Pentair Hypro Force Field. This pump features a unique self-regulated chamber that allows the pump to run dry while eliminating cracked seals, so you can spray longer and more reliably. Learn more at pentair.com/hypro.
Your soybeans are in the bin, but the game isn't over yet. Score more points this year by taking your beans to the end zone. At $10 beans, every point of moisture below your target takes away 15 cents per bushel. Reclaim that lost yield with the End Zone Bin System from FarmShop MFG.
Want to cut production costs without losing yield? Brian Ryberg from Buffalo Lake, Minnesota has done just that. Here's his story.
We began using a soil warrior on our farm the fall of 2014. We've seen many benefits from better water infiltration, a lot less hours on equipment, fuel, being able to reduce our fertilizer side. So it's really simplified our operation.
See what makes Soil Warrior different and better at soilwarrior.com.
Acre to acre, year to year, generation to generation, nobody scrutinizes performance like you do. And acre to acre, year to year, generation to generation, the consistent performance of Asgrow brand soybeans helps to keep your profitability out in front, offering leading agronomic expertise and 100% exclusive genetics for strong yield potential. Ask your dealer how much further you can grow when Asgrow leads the way. Always read and follow grain marketing and all other stewardship practices and pesticide label directions.
You're looking for soybeans that give you the yield you want. But when it comes to fighting your toughest weeds, you also need flexibility. Introducing Extend Flex Soybeans. Elite genetics with triple tolerance to dicamba, glyphosate, and glufosinate. The yield you want, the choice you need. Learn more at extendflexsoy.com. Always read and follow IRM where applicable, grain marketing and all other stewardship practices and pesticide label directions.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio. Thanks for joining us today. We're talking about picking soybean varieties for disease tolerance. We were just talking about soybean cyst nematode the other day, and we had a lot of growers saying, well, the nematode trait is going to be really important, but I have to have this defensive characteristic or that one. And you're absolutely right. You need it. If you've got a situation out in your field, you've got to have that for this year. And certainly long term, we want to try to fix a lot of those issues that are out in the field if we possibly can. We got Kevin Keller with us right now. He's with DeKalb Asgrow down in Nebraska. Kevin, talking about defensive traits in beans, I know we've got a lot of excitement about some of the new traits coming out, like Extend Flex, but certainly this is going to be one of the questions you get this year. What are the defensive tolerances for that variety?
Yeah, so, you know, with defensive tolerances, like anything, you know, when you're talking disease, you really want to look at a lot of different facets, you know, not only the variety tolerances, but everything that goes in that as well, such as their cultural practices and what else you can do to help manage that disease. With the Extend Flex trait in particular, I was actually just kind of going through and looking at some of our disease ratings for certain things to help some growers place some soybeans, and you know, looking at a couple of those key diseases that a lot of people look at for variety tolerance on, such as white mold. We're looking at six varieties between that 2.0 and 3.7 that offer really nice tolerance. And then on SDS, actually 11 in that 2.0 to 3.7. So pretty exciting to see some tolerances coming in on the new class right away.
Yeah, that is really nice. And obviously, we want to see good yielding stuff, too. I think a lot of the new varieties have proven that. They've got some pretty good yield. But yeah, you're right. Finding that mix of what you need. SDS was certainly one a lot of growers talked about this year. And you had mentioned cultural practices and some of the different agronomic things you can do. I mean, SDS is something that you can manage around to some degree.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. A lot of people think about weeds is something you want to definitely control with multiple modes of action. You know, I listen to your guys' show, and you guys talk about that quite a bit. And if the listeners are listening, then I'm probably preaching to the choir a little bit there. But, you know, if you think about Palmer pigweed, Palmer amaranth, for example, if you looked at a label and said, hey, this warrant product that has acetylcholine works really well on Palmer, and that's all you did, you might be kind of disappointed. And so SDS is kind of the similar, you know, and any disease really in soybeans is kind of similar. You might say, hey, I got this problem, but let's look at variety tolerance, but let's look at some of these other things as well. So with SDS in particular, you guys always talk about cultural practices. So drainage, you know, is definitely one, soil fertility. But I think what a lot of growers would probably look at here is, hey, what's the variety tolerance, but also seed treatments. So there's some really nice seed treatment options out there. Olivo happens to be one that we often do recommend with our soybeans, and it's also one that works on SCN as well, or helps suppress SCN at that SDS rate. So that helps it, as we know that there is a little bit of SCN interaction with SDS, to have a seed treatment that works on both ends.
Yeah, I sure like that approach of let's take multiple shots at a lot of these problems out in the field. And if we can reduce them a little bit, well, then the next stress that comes along, like drought stress, for example, bothers us less if we've got a healthier plant. So I do like that. I do like looking at, you mentioned drainage and soil fertility. Those things are real key. And you add that seed treatment to the mix, or a foliar fungicide, to try to help with some of these different things. That's pretty important. Just speaking specifically to your area, Kevin, I know there's a lot of growers that have got irrigation, and then they've also got dry land. How does that change things as you're picking varieties out this year?
Yeah, certainly. You know, we're definitely setting up for what looks like a dry year ahead. I hope that changes for all the growers out there. Certainly don't need a 2019, but having some moisture in the forecast would be nice. But as we look at that, that can change. Obviously, the outlook of some diseases, stress certainly does build in something to think about on certain diseases, such as brown stem rot. You know, if we would come into next season with some decent moisture, with some snowfall, and we have a real dry late fall, that's something that can definitely trigger quite a few diseases. You know, SDS is probably included in that one as well. So it's just another trigger of stress to think about as we go into the 2021 season.
Yeah, it is a fun time as we start putting together soybean variety plans for farmers and working with a lot of growers on picking out varieties based on disease tolerance ratings that they're looking for as well. Talking with Kevin Keller here with DeKalb Asgrow in Nebraska. Kevin, thank you so much. Really appreciate having you on.
Thank you as well. You guys have a great day.
You bet. You too. Let's head over to Iowa. We got Bill Backus with us right now with BASF. Bill, how are you doing?
Doing great. Great. How are you doing today?
Doing pretty good. Doing pretty good. You know, there's so many choices now with traits in soybeans. That is exciting for me because there's a lot of things to talk through in terms of managing for the different weeds that are out there, for example. But here we go. We've got a lot of new varieties coming in and trying to figure out exactly where they're at for their disease tolerance ratings. That's a little tricky sometimes.
Yeah, it sure is. It sure is. As you sort through, you know, really all the varieties, and, you know, here at BASF, you know, we've got a really nice, broad, diverse portfolio that we're looking at with the Credenz LGT27 soybeans, primarily for the Midwest. We do offer other traits in the South and the Mid-South. Zotavo Enlist E3 soybeans, basically a brand that's owned by MS Tech, but we're the exclusive distributors of that. And, you know, it's really critical in supporting all the efforts that we're doing to basically, you know, feed this growing population through crop-based food, feed, fuel, and fiber production. So really everything that we're trying to do is focused on that variety selection and understanding the disease tolerance to maximize yield performance.
You know, you mentioned a couple of different traits there, and certainly there are farmers who are going to plant multiple traits on their farm. I think a lot of them will say, let's just stick with one and try and keep it neat. But when the two traits you mentioned, you can spray Liberty herbicide over the top of both of them, and certainly growers that have been using that Liberty program for a while are excited that they've got more offerings now that they can use Liberty in, and that'll be a nice thing. So when you're out there spraying Liberty, for example, let's say you've got disease issues, and we're talking with Kevin Keller here a little earlier, he mentioned white mold right away, and I know that's one we're concerned about. So if we're using foliar fungicides, what do you think about that program? I mean, if you're using Liberty herbicide, you got an option where you're spraying 15 or 20 gallons of water, and you could use a little smaller droplets than the great big ones that you're using spraying Enlist One or an Extendamax or something like that. Could be an opportunity there to help you with disease control.
Absolutely. So as you know, I'll reference a trial I did there not too far from you, just up there in northwest Iowa near Hartley, Iowa, and did that in 2019, where we actually did our Endura fungicide. We also did our Revitech, our new fungicide offering in the market, and compared all those to, you know, an untreated check, and that was my variety screen, where I really sorted through all the different varieties. And, you know, that was quite interesting what I did. I did have surprisingly, a 42.7 bushel per acre swing in varieties that were susceptible versus a tolerant. And then when you added the Endura to that, which is really focused on white mold, Revitech has a little bit of a suppression label there as well, but Endura is the one that we do actually market in white mold areas, and it really had a tremendous response when you dig into the data. So definitely some opportunities there. So I'd encourage you to talk to your local retailer and you guys as well, and see what fungicide is going to be best to add into that Liberty application.
Hey, one last thing. Now, talking about your territory in Iowa, a little different year in 2020 than it was in 18 and 19. Guys got a lot of field work done. That should help us, shouldn't it? Fighting disease when they got their tillage done, got compaction taken care of?
Yeah, I'd say overall, as we dig through all that different diseases that we have and the things that we battle, when you start, you know, digging through, you know, Kevin had mentioned SDS, and they talked about Alevo, you know, things we can do there, especially you see that a lot of the different driveways and things like that. As you dig into, you know, really every other disease you can think about, we're definitely going to reduce the impact. Again, if we have, you know, we hopefully have some moisture here in 2021, that's going to be a better deal for us to
well,
have some diseases, but keep rolling here. So
you bet. Yeah, we hope to get back to what some would call a normal year. Not sure what that is. We seem to get a lot of extremes anymore, but normal would be cool. We're talking to Bill Backus here with BASF. Bill, thank you so much. Really appreciate having you on.
You bet. Thanks again. Take care. Everybody have
Got it. I just cut Bill off. Well, sorry about that, Bill. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Heat, drought, wind, hail, northern corn leaf blight, gray leaf spot. If your corn is under stress, you are too. Get Veltima fungicide, swift activity, with fast payback, an expanded application window. Makes life simple, and it's the secure choice. With powerful residual for visibly healthier corn. Swift, simple, secure. Veltima fungicide. Call your BASF rep today. Always read and follow label directions. Veltima fungicide is not registered in all states.
A lot goes into keeping a precision operation moving. The inputs you choose have to deliver results. New Dallaro Complete Fungicide from Bayer offers unmatched consistency and the most complete disease control available. Your corn and soybeans are protected and yields higher even in unpredictable conditions. With Dallaro Complete, you get results you can count on to help keep your precision operation running smoothly. Always read and follow label instructions. To learn more, visit DallaroComplete.us today.
Give your corn a strong defense against stress throughout the season with MycoApply Endoprime SC. MycoApply Endoprime SC uses four specially selected species of mycorrhizal fungi to protect your crop against stress. That means more access to water and key micronutrients while building a healthy soil structure for stronger crops for years to come. Stronger corn starts beneath the surface. Learn more about MycoApply Endoprime SC at EndoprimeCorn.com. Always read and follow label instructions.
It's about time. Applied at Planting, new Xyway 3D fungicide from FMC delivers foliar disease protection from planting to harvest. Active ingredient flutriafol moves from the soil through the corn as it grows for inside-out protection from roots to tassel. For season-long protection, choose first-of-its-kind Enfuro Xyway 3D fungicide. To learn more, call 815-362-7747 today. Always read and follow all label directions.
We now bring you an important news bulletin.
This just in from Live Action News.
Innovation has come to the world of burndown.
New Elevore herbicide controls your toughest weeds, even glyphosate and ALS-resistant weeds like mare's tail and henbit. Talk with your retailer about Elevore herbicide today and ask how you can start elevating your burndown.
Maintaining your crops is as important now as it's ever been. Howler, a revolutionary fungicide from AgBiome, can help. It provides long-lasting protection from a broad spectrum of foliar and soil diseases that affect crops. Howler is OMRI listed, has multiple modes of action, and has minimal pre-harvest and re-entry intervals. It's flexible, easy to use, and is available right now. Visit agbiome.com/howler to learn more.
Listening to Ag PhD Radio. Thanks for joining us today, talking about picking soybean varieties for disease tolerance. And we've got Tom Evans with us right now down in Tennessee. He's an agronomist there. Tom, thanks for joining us.
Hey, how y'all doing today?
You know, pretty good, but your job gets a little tougher when it comes to picking soybean varieties because now we've got, I don't even know how many traits anymore out there. Five different ways you could get soybeans, different trait packages at least, depending on where you're at in the country. And now you get
that's about right. And it just keeps getting worse and worse every year.
But how do you compare that when you've got plots where, oh, we can only have Xtend varieties in these plots because we're going to spray dicamba, but we can only have Enlist plots over here because we're going to spray 2,4-D. How do you compare varieties between trait packages?
Well, that's getting to be, like I said earlier, that's getting to be a pretty good challenge. But luckily, I think your best bet is to get a good relationship with your farmer and know your farmer's fields and, you know, be able to get out there with him or her and walk through them and look and see, like, where their wet spots are, where this is, and, you know, what's around them, because that's another thing. We have to use Field View now, and we have to use all these apps for when you're spraying applications for Xtend varieties or now for the Enlist, make sure that you get, you're trying to minimize your drift package and just getting out there and walking with them and knowing what they got. That seems to be the best way to go about it. And then start looking at what they've seen, you know, asking them questions like, what have you seen as far as problems that you've had in your fields here lately?
You know, it is important. And what I find interesting, because we farm as well and certainly talk to a lot of farmers each week, that we don't always remember all those little things that popped up. For example, there was a farmer that we were talking to last year, and he was complaining about, oh, no, I used this seed treatment and it got a little sticky in my seed box and I had trouble planting it. Well, we were just talking to him this week and he's like, yep, planning on using this seed treatment. And we followed up with, well, wait, wasn't that one pretty sticky last year? He goes, oh, yeah, I forgot about that. I was going to switch because that was too sticky.
And that can happen. And that sometimes, I hate to say it, but you just get a bad batch.
Yeah,
I don't know what to tell you.
It can. Or you get bad weather that day or something like that. Yeah. There's no doubt about that. But, you know, there are a lot of seed treatment choices out there. Are you finding good success with any of them for nematodes or for SDS?
Well, there's the Olivo treatment, which is about the only one that I know of in this area for the SDS. And, you know, SDS being probably the number one thing I had on my list to talk to y'all about if you asked me about them was, you know, that's a hard one to control for. And usually selecting varieties is the best way to go if they know they've had that. And if they're doing bean on bean or anything like that, to make sure that they're keeping, you know, because the Olivo treatment is pretty expensive. And, you know, some of them, they just, when you hit them with that sticker shock, they don't like to hear that. And I'm like, well, I'm sorry. That is what it is.
That's exactly
right. Or we can go with this type of bean here. And then they're like, well, I've never heard of that bean before. I said, well, I know, but here's what the traits look like in plot data. And here's how it shakes out. And it has a very high tolerance for SDS. Would you like to try it?
How about switching up maturities? Do you see a big difference there if you plant something a little early for the area or really full season for the area?
Yeah, I have actually. I have actually seen, and it drives me crazy being a seed supplier and everything, but I've actually seen them planting like 4/8 as early as, you know, the 1st of April, you know, and usually when I'm trying to pull in my bean stock, what everybody's ordered for the year, I'll pull in my threes first, I'll pull in my early fours, then I'll pull in my late fours. But then I've seen where a couple farmers have wanted to plant these 4/8, 4/9s up front early in the season because they feel like it has a better advantage for them growing, and they've had some pretty good high yields and success by doing that. So I thought that was pretty interesting.
Yeah, we've gotten a number of calls and talked to the number of farmers that are trying those different strategies. And I think it's fun. I think it keeps things interesting, number one, but it also really spreads the risk when you've got things flowering at different times and hitting different growth stages at different times. Spreads out the workload, spreads out your disease risk.
It spreads the risk. You're exactly right.
You know, going into this season, Tom, what are the big concerns you've got when you look at soybeans? You mentioned SDS is a real big concern for you. Is root knot a big issue in your area?
No, it's really not that I've seen. But then again, maybe we just didn't identify it properly. I've identified frog eye leaf spot. We have got that, and we have had some, let me make sure I say this right, Phytophthora,
yep,
root and stem rot a lot. But I've not really seen a whole lot of that. I've not seen a whole lot of anthracnose. I've not seen, you know, you all talk about white mold a lot. I haven't seen white mold here in Tennessee at all.
You're too warm for that, Tom. You got to come up here where it's below 90 for a while. You guys, I don't know. You can complain about the heat sometimes, but that's one good thing.
A lot of moisture though, so I was like, you know, I haven't seen it.
Yeah, it's interesting. As those weather conditions have changed the last few years, we see different problems pop up, and it's a good reason why growers are trying to spread risk, no doubt about it. We're talking with Tom Evans. He's an agronomist down in Tennessee. Tom, thank you so much. Really appreciate having you on. Good luck. You're heading into the spring.
Yes, sir. You have a great day.
You know, Brian, we look at that maturity zone and planting different maturities. And certainly in corn, we see a lot of growers that are doing this. On soybeans, I know we just had a question the other day with somebody that wanted to vary up just a few days. Let's go from a 2/1 to a 2/4, and they were a little nervous about that. So I don't know. Why are growers more nervous about that in soybeans? I think it may even have...
Because there's usually a yield penalty when you go lower. Now, it doesn't always happen, and I would say this, if you have great agronomics, in other words, you have your drainage taken care of, you have excellent fertility, you're controlling the weeds, insects, diseases, it doesn't hurt you as much. But I remember years ago, so around here, a 2.0 I would call just about ideal. On the very late end of things, 2.4, and on the early side, you know, like maybe a 1.7. Okay, so that's kind of our range. Well, we used to raise some, I remember it was a 0.9 for seed production. We did that for maybe 3 years in a row. And the third year, it was like a 20 bushel hit. And I'm going, yeah, I'm done. I'm not doing this anymore. It was nice because we could start harvest a week early and get some tillage done and fertility and all that. And so that part was great. But you start doing the math and you go, wait a second, $10 beans times 20 bushels, that's $200 an acre. I like to start harvest early and I like to finish some things early, but it's not worth $200 an acre. So, I mean, since then, we've raised some early beans with obviously much better success than that. But still, it's a yield penalty. So I think that's a big thing. The other thing that I wanted to say here with picking soybean varieties for disease tolerance is this. Well, you have to trust your seed dealer on things because there are so many new varieties. It's roughly half new varieties every year for corn and beans. It's crazy how fast these varieties are coming out. And so you kind of have to trust that seed dealer. But don't trust them that far. I'm just nothing against your seed dealer or mine. I'm just simply saying no one has enough information to say exactly for sure how good any variety is going to be when it comes to disease tolerance. So where I'm going with this is if you have some major problem on your farm, I take, for example, a lot of the farmers who have iron deficiency chlorosis. As you go north of here and you get up into, let's say, the Red River Valley in North Dakota and Minnesota, and they've got 8.85 pH, well, of course they're going to have massive iron deficiency chlorosis problems. Well, if you don't have an unbelievably fantastic bean, you're in trouble. So I don't know. I mean, if I'm going to plant a new variety, I'm not going to do it on very many acres because that disease tolerance thing is so massive. So I'm just saying, if you really are going to put a lot of faith in your seed dealer, you better be really careful and you should plant a lot of different varieties. But otherwise, if you've got some massive problem, then I'd plant what's been successful in the past for you, not necessarily trusting new varieties. Spread your risk and you're well ahead. Well, stay tuned. We'll be right back after this.
Fill once, plant all day. The Thrive 3D application system from FMC is a revolutionary in-furrow crop protection platform that plants up to 480 acres between refills. The Thrive 3D application system mounts to most major planter brands and can be yours at no cost with the FMC Freedom Pass program. To learn more, call 815-362-7747 today. Always read and follow all label directions.
When it comes to trusted herbicide formulations, you know Nufarm. And you certainly know Nufarm exclusive Weedmaster. For decades, Weedmaster has been the go-to herbicide for consistent burndown weed control in a huge variety of crops, and in range and pasture management too. Don't let yield-robbing weeds stand in the way of your progress or profits. Nufarm and Weedmaster Herbicide, here to help.
Have resistant weeds invaded your cornfields? Tough 5EC, manufactured by Beltrim Crop Protection, can help. When added to the post-emergence tank mix, Tough 5EC synergizes the effectiveness of HPPD inhibitors on key broadleaf weeds. In fact, university field trials have shown 5 to 30% increased control of herbicide-resistant Palmer amaranth and water hemp. Now that's tough on weeds. Ask your local retailer about Tough 5EC or visit BeltramUSA.com. Always read and follow label instructions.
Did you know soybean diseases like white mold and sudden death syndrome can survive in your soil even after rotating crops? Prevention of these diseases is a constant battle, and yield loss from an infection can be devastating. The right management plan makes all the difference. Keep your beans safe next spring with Heads Up Seed Treatment. Heads Up guards your seed treatment from both white mold and SDS. Stay protected and profitable by asking to have your seed pre-treated with Heads Up. Learn more at headsupst.com.
You would never plant seed or apply herbicide with a 20% success rate. So why are you still applying phosphorus fertilizer with a maximum availability of only 20%? Double your phosphate availability and increase yields with NutriCharge from AgroTech USA. NutriCharge's patent-pending technology protects phosphorus from negative chemical reactions that tie up your fertilizer investment. NutriCharge performs across all soil types and pHs. Contact AgroTech USA or your local Van Deese supply representative today.
Success isn't just about maintaining your operation, how you make out for the season, or how much you can get from each acre. It's about doing precisely what needs to be done to feed your crop and grow your legacy, all the way down to the last drop. AgroLiquid Precision Crop Nutrition. Apply less, expect more. Find a retailer at agroliquid.com.
Welcome back to Ag PhD Radio. Brian Hefty here, along with my brother Darren. Today in the show, we have been talking about picking soybean varieties for disease tolerance. If you have any questions on that or anything else that you'd like to talk about that's happening on your farm, just give us a call here, 844-44-AG-PHD, or send us an email, radio@agphd.com. We're going to jump right back into the Ag PhD mailbag. Darren, what's our next question?
All right, this one comes from Luke in southern South Dakota. He said, I got 35 acres here that I did 5-acre grids on, and you can see it's wildly different. It's hilly ground.
Now, let me stop right there. Okay, when you have, Darren just said, he used the word wildly different. Now, if you've got a flat field and you go 5-acre grids, okay. If you have a field that Darren is going to call wildly different and very hilly, 5-acre grids aren't going to cut it. Now, I will say this, because I'm looking at his soil test here, you know, it's not like he needs any lime. Lime is the number one thing where I'd say definitely you got to get down to 1-acre grids if you think you need to lime on ground like that. He doesn't, so I'm not super worried about it or anything, but I would say this, if he took even one of those 5-acre grids and pulled 5 samples in there, and in other words, split it up into 1-acre grids from the 5, just one of them. Just do it once and just see what you see for a difference. When you see dramatic differences, that's where a lot of times it will pay. And the lime is my best example, but here's the reason why it's not that big a deal for him, because almost everything on his soil test is low. Go ahead, Darren.
All right, so he said in sample number 2, for example, you can see we've got a high pH. I'm just wondering if you believe...
It's 7.7. There's a 7.7 and a 7.8 in here. Otherwise, we're in the 6s.
I just wonder if you believe that's due to the calcium. Could we just add more magnesium and potassium? Would that fix it? Number 5
stop.
Is...
Okay, we'll just take that. So here's the worst of it. He's got 89% calcium, 7.7% magnesium, 3.2% potassium, and he's got a 7.8 pH. That's his highest pH spot and also his highest calcium level. So yes, you could throw a little bit of magnesium out there, but here's the thing. Most of your ground doesn't need magnesium, so this kind of goes along to my lime comment. You can throw magnesium out there, but there might be 3 acres out of your 5 acres that don't need it, or 2 acres, or maybe it's 4 acres out of the 5 that don't need it. So that's where, I don't know. If I'm going to spend money on magnesium, which I almost never do, I want to be careful and be sure I put it in the right spot. Now, how can I lower that calcium down? Yeah, if you just put some more potassium out, you're only 3.2% K. You need that for sure. You do need magnesium, at least in some of your ground. And here's the other big thing. Every single sample he's got is extremely deficient in sulfur. He needs more sulfur. So when you're going to pick a sulfur source, there are a lot of different sulfate sources, but there's also elemental sulfur. Well, you want to pick elemental sulfur rather than one of the sulfate sources if you had a choice just between the two and that's all you're picking. And the reason why is because the elemental sulfur has a better chance to lower that pH. In the conversion from sulfur over to sulfate, it will lower your pH at least a little bit. And so that's what I would pick there. Do those things and that will definitely help you.
All right. Okay. Number 5, get a side hill. It apparently has some erosion issues. He said, just wondering what you would do to try to fix that. They're going to try to stick to minimal tillage.
Yes, and I can understand that. But here's the problem. His phosphorus levels there are 7. 7 parts per million. Okay, that's extremely deficient. And in addition to that, that's where he's got he's got 3% base saturation K. He's also really low on zinc, just terribly deficient on zinc, and very deficient on copper. So there are four nutrients that if you lay them on the soil surface on a side hill, they're going to wash away. They're going to wash away. I don't care if you're doing a minimal tillage. When you've got a pretty steep side hill, they're washing away. So what would I do? I'd probably deep inject them somehow, some way. I'd use a coulter. I'd use a shank. I'd do something to deep inject them. I'd still do minimal tillage, but you got to get that fertilizer down into the ground. Otherwise, you're going to lose it. We have dealt with a lot of slopes over the years. We have, I don't know what I would say, 20% of our ground, 30% of our ground that's highly erodible land. So I'm very, very familiar with steep slopes, and we have to treat those a little bit differently than the flat ground. We can't just go broadcast out there, and now we're going to till the stuff in. And that's great on flat ground, but you know, if it's super steep, everything's going to wash down the hill. And next question.
All right. Last thing he had was he said sulfur's low across the board. Yep. Micros are pretty low. Just curious, what do you see for red flags? Do we just stick on the N, P, and K working on that? Do we do some other things right away?
Yeah, you absolutely do some other things. I already mentioned the sulfur. You need sulfur on all your ground. You need it desperately. I was mentioning this earlier in the show, but everybody wants to talk about nitrogen, and I do too, because we spend a crazy amount of nitrogen every year. We raise pretty good corn yields, so we spend a lot of nitrogen. But if you have an adequate level of sulfur, well, now you need less nitrogen. It's awesome. Or put it another way, you can get more yield out of the same nitrogen. So I want that. So he desperately needs sulfur. He's at like 4 parts per million in a lot of his ground. I'll come back to the zinc, a lot of 1 part per million stuff. Copper, 1 part per million. We'd like it at 2. Boron, 0.5 part per million. We'd like that at 1.5 or 2, something like that. So here's the thing. You know, he's got a little bit of pH imbalance. A pH imbalance tells us, like this 7.7, 7.8 pH, it tells us something else is wrong. Okay. It's just a result of everything else going on in your soil. If you get a little bit, at least, of some of these micros, and you get your phosphorus levels up a little more and your potassium, what's going to happen is your plants are going to produce more yield. But the way I look at it is your plants are going to produce more roots when this happens, and then they're going to kick out more organic acids or chelating agents. That will naturally lower your soil pH a little bit too. So yes, I would work on everything. And I know it stinks when you go, well, man, I'm low on phosphorus, I'm low on potassium, I'm low on sulfur, I'm low on zinc, I'm low on copper, I'm low on boron. Where's it end, Brian? Well, that's just the way it is. So we have to start getting some of those up somehow, some way, or at least fertilize with them. So let's say you didn't want to go broadcast and go crazy or anything, at least do some banding and you know, get some of these nutrients out there. Because right now I can just tell you the sulfur, the zinc, the copper, and the boron, they're all hurting your corn yield. They're all hurting your corn yield because all of those are not sufficient for a decent corn crop.
All right. Thanks for the questions. We really appreciate that, Lucas. Let's head out to Ohio next. You got a question from Fred here. He said, I got a great deal on some potash that I couldn't pass up, but I'm also planning on putting 2 tons of high calcium lime on either later on this year or early next spring. My question is, if I put the potassium down now, will it get tied up later when I put the lime on? I've got light ground with around a 6 to 8 CEC.
Nope, don't even worry about it. No problem. Oh, but if he has a 6 to 8 CEC, and didn't you say 2 tons of lime? Sounds like a high rate to me. How low is his pH?
Doesn't say. I don't have a soil test.
Unless he's in the fours. Unless he's in the fours, I struggle to believe that 2 tons is going to be a sufficient amount. I think it's going to be too much.
It sounds like a lot of lime. I would just caution you, Fred, not to over lime.
Yeah. Now, as we say that, and let's say you're a farmer in Iowa or Minnesota or Ontario who's listening today and you go, wait a second, these guys said 2 tons of lime is too much. Well, I'm putting on 3 or 5 or 6. Well, yeah, but you most likely have a lot heavier soil than a 6 to 8 cation exchange capacity. That's sand. Now, for that farmer, he might consider that his heavy ground. I don't know. It's all relative, okay? But just understand, when we're talking about a 6 to 8 CEC, that to me is sand. Well, sand doesn't take a lot of lime to change the pH. You need a little bit, a tiny dose of lime, and it'll change that pH quickly. In heavy ground, it takes a lot. So that's the reason why I bring that up. Yeah, we just don't want somebody over-liming and overspending.
All right. got some feedback here. This one's from Mike. He said, just watching a video about Eric Watson and the new world wheat record, and I noticed partway through the video, he's wearing one of your Ag PhD caps. I just thought you guys nice. Might be interested to know that and know that you touch people around the world. Well, thanks, Mike. We really appreciate you pointing that out. And yeah, we do know Eric. He's been up here to our field day a couple times, and I've actually gotten a chance to go down to his farm one time too. Really, really impressive grower, just the amount of detail.
But it is important to share information around the world. That is great. It's always good to learn from other farmers.
Thanks for listening to our show so far. We've got more Ag PhD Mailbag coming up right after this.
I need the solve without the sell.
With NK Seeds, I get people I trust who show me where their hybrids and varieties fit in my field without the heavy sell.
So I get solutions that solve my problems from a partner who knows that success matters.
Find your solve at nkseeds.com.
We now bring you an important news bulletin.
This just in from Live Action News.
Innovation has come to the world of burndown.
New Elevore herbicide controls your toughest weeds, even glyphosate and ALS-resistant weeds like mare's tail and henbit. Talk with your retailer about Elevore herbicide today and ask how you can start elevating your burn down.
You deserve to have a building that will last for generations. With more than 110 years of experience and thousands of satisfied customers, Morton Buildings is the industry leader you can trust. Unlike other construction companies, you work with Morton Buildings craftsmen from conception to completion. There's no better time to buy. Lock in your new building for 2020 today. Contact your local Morton sales office or visit mortonbuildings.com.
You need a powerful herbicide to fight the war on weeds. Vellum is Rotem North America's mesotrione herbicide, and it fights against the annual broadleaf weeds attacking your cornfields. Winning this battle means higher yields, lower cost to you, and maximized profitability. For long-lasting residual weed control, check out Evinco Vilify and our newest mix, Rixa. For application, flexibility, and season-long control, that's Evinco Vilify and Rixa, powered by Vellum. For more information, visit vellumherbicide.com. That's B-E-L-L-U-M herbicide.com.
Success isn't just about maintaining your operation, how you make out for the season, or how much you can get from each acre. It's about doing precisely what needs to be done to feed your crop and grow your legacy, all the way down to the last drop. AgroLiquid Precision Crop Nutrition. Apply less, expect more. Find a retailer at agroliquid.com.
Give your corn a strong defense against stress throughout the season with MycoApply Endoprime SC. MycoApply Endoprime SC uses four specially selected species of mycorrhizal fungi to protect your crop against stress. That means more access to water and key micronutrients while building a healthy soil structure for stronger crops for years to come. Stronger corn starts beneath the surface. Learn more about MycoApply Endoprime SC at endoprimecorn.com. Always read and follow label instructions.
Welcome back to Ag PhD Radio. Brian Hefty here, along with my brother Darren. Today on the show, we have been answering a number of your questions, and we're going to get back to that here in just a minute in the Ag PhD mailbag. If you have any questions for us, just email them in, radio@agphd.com, or you can give us a call, 844-44-AG-PHD. That's 844-44-442-4743. All right, so Darren, you handed me some soil tests, and yeah. You have and what I think is a very interesting question. Go ahead.
Well, it's a realistic story. And just like a lot of people talk to us and say, man, what I like about your show, Brian and Darren, is you guys are actual brothers, and I can relate to that because I've got a brother, I've got a cousin, I've got a dad, whatever, on the farm, and we kind of have some of the same struggles. Well, here's Josh in central Iowa. For the last 7 years, His dad would only let him take a soil sample from one spot in the field. He didn't want a variable rate apply fertilizer. He's flat rated everything for 40 years. And this field's been no-till for 25 years. He let him do some grid sampling. Well, guess what? His sample spot was 5.8 pH, and he wanted to put lime on the whole field based on a 5.8. But he found when we did the grid sampling, anything from a 4.9 to a 7.5. So he's wondering about that pH range, number one. But number two, there's one sample that only has one part per million phosphorus and another sample that has 10.5% base saturation K. How is that possible when he's been flat rating for all these years?
Okay, first of all, let me address the second thing. There isn't one part per million of phosphorus. What it is that is one of the high pH spots. It's a 7.5 for pH. Now, fortunately, he got both the Olson and the Bray test run there. The Bray test only showed the weak Bray one part per million. So that's why you look at it and you go, oh, I only have one part per million. No. When you have a pH over 7, the Olson test is going to be more accurate, and that actually says 46 parts per million. So his phosphorus levels aren't horrible. I mean, some are as low as 18 parts per million, so yes, we need some help there, but it's not nearly as bad as he first thought. Now, there is one spot that says 10.5% base saturation K. Could that be a mistake? Could there be something wrong? Because most everything else looks fairly in line with a lot of the samples, except for that K level. But I'll say this. We have found that if, let's say, you're broadcasting for many, many years, one of two things can happen. Number one, stuff can wash down to the bottom of the hill. So this could be at the bottom of the hill. And that's where, and the phosphorus levels are a little bit elevated, but the potassium levels are like 5 times higher than anywhere in the field. So that could have been it. The other thing could be, it might be a really horrible yielding spot. If it's a terrible yield spot, now I doubt it, but let's say something else is going wrong there. Let's say there's a drainage issue or, you know, something else that's causing a problem. And so for several years, there was very little crop there and you just kept putting on lots of fertilizer. I'll give you an example. Let's say you're fertilizing for 200, but you got 50. Okay, well, you do that for just a few years and all of a sudden you go, whoa, I got a lot of fertility out here. Yes, you do. All right, so as to this soil test and that variance, I'll just speak to our own farm for a second. So back when we were doing a lot of 5-acre grids and we were putting on lime, because we had a lot of pHs down into the upper 4s, low 5s. So we put on lime. We went back and tested the next year. And, you know, we saw a little bit of increase, but we're like, oh, we're still really low. So we threw more lime on. Okay, then we did that for 2 or 3 years. Now that we're doing 1-acre grids a few years later, we go, oh no, we really screwed it up. What ended up happening is in our 5-acre grids, there were areas that were low pH, but there are other areas that were fine. Just like what he found here when he went out and did some soil sampling in the whole field as opposed to just one sample in a field. Well, if you've got a 4.9 pH, you've got to get lime out there, and you need a little more than what you would put out in a 5.8 pH like he was going to fertilize for. And here's the next thing. He's got a whole bunch of pHs in the 6s and even a few into the low 7s. Well, I don't want to put any lime there at all. And by the way, in a dry year like this, that pH might be 0.1, 0.2 low. So I don't want to get carried away on that, and I really don't want to put anything out there. So what happened to us when we did this is we overspent on lime because we didn't even need to adjust the pH, just like he found out here. He's got a bunch of spots, roughly half the field. He doesn't even need to put lime on. So that saves a bunch of money. But number two, if he was to put the lime out there, what's going to happen? We're going to raise the pH. And when you raise the pH, just like us, you know what we had? 20 bushel yield he had on the corn. Okay, so I overspent on lime. Then I cost myself 20 bushels on corn yield. And then you know what I have to do to fix the problem? Put on elemental sulfur, and that will fix it. But now I spent on lime, I spent on elemental sulfur, and I got less yield. Now, how does that pencil out? Not very good. So this is why we talk about soil testing as much as we do and as passionately as we do here on the show, because we don't want you to overspend and screw up like we did. So we were dumb enough to make the mistakes. And that's why we're very open about talking about our stupid mistakes and how much money it cost us. You start running the math on it, and I mean, it's literally hundreds of dollars an acre that we cost ourselves over a few years. Hundreds of dollars an acre. I mean, we're lucky that we could afford it, and we're lucky that we didn't do it on all our ground, but how dumb. How dumb. Just a waste of tens of thousands of dollars. So this is why we want you to do grid samples or zone samples, and especially when you're going to lime, it better be small grids and small zones. I also see some people going to zones, and it's like 30-acre zones. I'm going, no way. There's no possible chance that all 30 acres are the same if this is the first time you're putting that all together, or you're sampling over there. Where I'm going with this is, let's say you did 30 one-acre grids, and you find out that over, let's say, 3 to 5 years of variable rate fertility, you kind of even them all out. Well, yeah, then now put them all together, at least for the next few years. That's fine if you want to save yourself a little money on soil testing. I have no issue with that. But to think that just right off the bat, I can put a 30-acre zone or a 30-acre grid together, not a chance in the world that that's all going to be exactly the same. And then what happens is, like, to my point, you're either going to overspend or you're going to underspend, and you might cost yourself yield on both ends of things. That's not how we maximize profit on the farm.
All right. Thanks for the question, Josh. Thanks for pushing things on your farm a little bit. I know it's tough sometimes to get, especially your dad or your grandpa, to make a change to something they've been doing for a long time. But it's kind of neat that you got the chance to do a little experimentation like this.
And since we have just a little bit of time left in the show, let me speak to that exactly. So our dad was very abrasive, way worse than I am, and I'm bad enough, okay? Darren thinks I'm terrible, and I probably am. But all I'm getting at is when our dad was so emphatic on, well, it's got to be this way. And we're just like, no, that's not right. There are sometimes I would literally just do things. And he'd get mad, but at least we did it, and at least we had an experiment. And if I was right, well, then I didn't hear about it again. I never got a thank you or, well, I'm glad you did that. But at least then we were right, and we changed our practices. And sometimes I don't want to ever say that for anybody who's listening to the show. Don't follow what I did, okay? But I'm just simply telling you from myself, because I didn't mind occasionally getting chewed out, and it was bad. I would just do it. And on a small scale, and it's not like I'm, you know, spending the farm into bankruptcy or anything like that. But I would say after a while, our dad got to be real supportive of, hey, we got to try things. We just want to try them on a small scale. Let's try it on a small scale. Even like earlier in the show, I was saying, okay, you got a 5-acre grid. Just take that one grid and do 1-acre samples inside that 5-acre grid. And now compare the 5-acre grid versus your 5 1-acre grids. And now you can prove it to yourself. Doesn't cost very much money. Very simple. You can do it yourself. But I'm just saying, if we don't push the envelope a little bit, how are we going to know? And thank goodness that on this test, he did 1-acre grid, or he did grids, I guess, rather than a big composite test. Otherwise, it would have been bad.
All right. Yeah, there's a lot. We could talk about that all day. Let me jump in one more here as we got just a minute left. This is from Rick. He said, you guys were talking about building organic matter. You've got a great list of things to put in there, but one thing that you missed was adding animals. You put animals on the land to eat the cover crop, and they increase fertility and organic matter out in your fields.
Well, maybe, but they also create compaction, and some people don't. I mean, a lot of people don't raise livestock, and then you have to put fence up. And I mean, it's not just all gain. With every decision we make, there's also expense and labor and management. And so I'm not saying it's bad. I'm just saying it doesn't necessarily fit for every single person.
There's always pros
person.
And cons, and right, exactly. I do like it. I love having animals into the rotation as well. I think that's great.
And I don't because of the compaction and the work.
I don't want to do chores anymore.
That's right. I don't want to do chores.
All right. Well, thanks for listening today. Be sure to join us again each weekday for more Ag PhD Radio.